Hey, 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 it's John Grimes from Ambiguously Blind. If you're like me and have a fever for more cowbell, consider this your medicine, the AT Banter Podcast.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of AT Banter.
Banter, banter.
Man, this is a podcast where we talk with advocates and members of the disability community to educate and inspire better conversation about disability. Hey, my name is Rob Minot, and joining me today, Mr. Ryan Fleury.
Hey.
Miss Liz Malone.
Hi. I'm stealing Ryan's. Hi.
All right.
And Mr. Steve Barkley is here, too.
Bazinga.
Now, Liz, you threw me off my... I was going to do like a rapid fire intro and you kind of threw me off there. I was expecting more. I didn't realize that it was... You were just doing the hoi.
Hoi.
Otherwise, it was... That was a perfect intro. No, I'm just happy. Listen, I'm just happy that I'm back in my home studio and I've got my right microphone and I feel like all is right in the world again.
Yay.
So that maybe influenced my opinion of the intro other than Liz's thing, but... Otherwise, but listen, this is why we do this on a weekly basis, because you never know what next week that might be the perfect intro.
Oh, well, the end of the show.
I'm sorry I fell on the mount at the beginning of the routine.
It's good. It leaves us something to aspire to.
Exactly. It would be boring if we got it right out. You know, it's fine. It gives us that thing, that golden ring to aspire to. One day.
Okay, maybe there will be gold rings next time Liz doesn't screw up. Okay. Feeling really good. Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome.
Move along.
Listen, how are you?
So glad the band's all back together today.
Well, I was going to say that. I was going to say everything. You know, I'm in my home studio. Everybody's here. The guests showed up. Like, it just, yeah, things are, we're going well. And then no one cares.
And then let's, okay, I'm just climbing back into the cellar. Okay, carry on.
See, I'm having trouble recovering from that. And I feel guilty.
Moving on.
Then mission accomplished.
Boy, I think we ought to just start the intro over again here.
No, it's fine.
Too many negative waves, Moriarty.
No.
Are you guys married yet?
This is our thing.
We're practicing.
Exactly.
We're perfecting our skills so we can ace the interview.
Excellent.
That's right. Yeah. It's like, yes, they're clearly together.
Like they hate each other just
they
enough.
They hate each other. Can't fake that level.
Loveless marriage.
Unless they've been practicing every week for like the past 6 months. So, and clearly they wouldn't be doing that. Anyways, how is everybody? Real quickly.
Good.
Since we just blew a bunch of time on that. Okay, great. Steve, how are you?
Fantastic.
Hey, are you ready for your big open house this week at Canadian Institute of Technology?
I am so not ready.
Really?
Although I did order sandwiches today, so that's one thing scratched off the list.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good. I'll take note of that. Sandwiches. Okay, great. From where, like Subway?
No, they're from the Safeway deli section, but they got some nice stuff. They got some little croissants and they've got wraps and sandwiches.
Hey, no, listen, the Safeway deli section actually is better than Subway.
Yeah.
Those are good. Yeah.
Right. Darn tootin'.
Good. Good. Excellent. Well, listen, we'll all have a full report next week on the show, I'm sure, because we'll all be at the open house of Canadian Institute of Technology. Well, with the exception of one person, we'll all be there, but we won't mention any names, Liz.
That would be a very expensive Uber ride for me. So
that'd be a bit much.
That is true. Anyways, all right. Getting to the reason that we're all here, which is the show. Hey, Ryan.
Yeah, Rob.
Tell the fine folks at home just what the heck we're doing today.
Today, we are speaking with another one of those fabulous people working for our friends over at Neil Squire. She is Courtney Cameron. Courtney, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Glad you could be here.
Yeah. Hello. I'm sorry you had to witness the stuff with Liz, but you know.
That's okay. That's okay.
The meltdown there. Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. I am the product of abuse.
I'm in Rob's meltdown. It's interesting, though, that you would assume it was you.
That speaks volumes. No. Podcast personalities, you have to deal with that. So you'd be same if you're on Joe Rogan as well. I mean, I'm sure he's a giant pain in the butt as well. Anyways, welcome, Courtney. We're so excited to be talking with you and the work that you do at Neo Squire. But before we dive into that, maybe tell the folks at home a little bit about yourself and your background and what you do over there at Neo Squire.
So hi, I'm Courtney. I'm based out of Halifax, Nova Scotia, here on the East Coast. And I'm the East Region Coordinator for Makers Making Change program, which is a program of Neo Squire. And so as East Region Coordinator, I oversee our four beautiful Atlantic Canadian provinces and Quebec as well. And so my main job is really kind of promoting our Makers Making Change program throughout my half of Canada, and really doing outreach, finding out what people need or kind of how we can help connect them with more affordable assistive technology. My background is not in tech. I did not start out in assistive tech at all. I started working in the disability field at least 10 years ago. I'm probably getting closer to 15, actually. I should probably count. But I started working in the employment field, and I was working for some different organizations, and just found out about Neo Squire, and just kind of the work that we do. And I just found it really, really interesting. And assistive technology was a new field for me, or kind of a new idea, even though I'd been working in the field, of disability already. So I just kind of, got interested in it. And I slowly made my way over from our employment programs, into working, with Makers Making Change full time. And I just love the idea of it being more affordable assistive tech. So that's my main job, is just kind of coordinating, whether it's different workshops that we're running for individuals, figuring out what kind of the needs of the community are and how we can get people the devices that they need or the assistive tech that they need.
So could you kind of break down Makers Making Change and what you're doing there?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So Makers Making Change as a program of Neo Squire, it's been around for probably 5, maybe 7 years. I always kind of ballpark that answer probably too often. But it all started with a device called the LipSync. So we received a grant from Google.org, and this was about 7 years ago. And so Neo Squire as an organization has always had a research and development department. We'd started out really our whole origin story with Neil. People always ask Neo Squire, like, what's that name mean? Neil was an actual individual. It was way back in 1980. He was a student athlete, and he was involved in a car accident that caused him to have a spinal cord injury and drastically changed his mobility. So because of his injury, he lost the ability to use his arms, legs, and the ability to speak well. He still could verbally communicate a bit, but it just... became really labor intensive and just more difficult for him. So he had a relative by the name of Bill, and Bill was visiting him in the rehab hospital and just thought, hey, there must be something we can do to help Neil. Bill had a background in engineering, and he was kind of an inventor type guy, the type of guy who, you know, if something broke, he'd pull it apart to fix it. Or if he saw a problem, he was trying to, you know, whip up a new solution for things. So when he was visiting Neil, he thought, okay, let's come up with a new way for Neil to communicate. So if you can imagine what technology was way back in the early 1980s, way different than what it is today. So what they did is they kind of developed one of the first SIP and PUF devices. So Neil learned Morse code, so dots and dashes. Those dots and dashes would equal SIPs and PUFs of his air. So he would use those breath blasts, or those sips and puffs of air. They would go down into what's called a teletype device, which would decipher the Morse code. And then his messages would be written on the screen of one of the very first versions of a Mac computer. Because again, early 1980s, you know, most people had not seen a computer, let alone for it to being used, for it to be used in this way was pretty monumental. So that became really just this really cool community movement, and people just got involved with this new way of using technology, really seeing that technology allowed people to, you know, communicate again or find their voice again in different ways. Unfortunately, Neil passed away in 1984. But because this community movement had started, or this group of individuals in the community had started, they became, you know, a real charity or a real foundation in his honor. So we originally were called the Neil Squire Foundation. And so we're actually coming up to our 40th anniversary here this upcoming June, 40 years of programming all across country. So we run a wide variety of programming in all different sections. As I mentioned, I worked employment before, so we have all different things going on. But we've always done that research and development piece of assistive technology, which really pertains to that original Neil Squire story. So to kind of tie it all back into Makers Making Change, we received a grant from Google.org to develop a new device. And so we had spent time developing new devices all along through our research and development team. But what we knew was that assistive technology is really, really expensive. And so we wanted to figure out a way to make it be more affordable for people with disabilities. So at the same time, there was sort of this new idea of open source technology happening, as well as the maker movement. So Makers Making Change really looks to utilize volunteer makers in the community, people who have skills and want to make stuff, who are looking for projects to make. We're really looking to find those people and connect them with people with disabilities who need assistive devices made for them. We have a website called makersmakingchange.com, and on it we have over 200, it's probably closer to, I think it's about 220 now, 220 devices on there. And so the whole idea is everything on there is open source. So if you yourself want to know how to make an assistive device, we give you all the information that you need to know how to make it. So if it's a 3D print file, the file's there, you can just take it and connect to a 3D printer and have that happen for you. If it's something that maybe involves more electronics or more components, we can connect you with links on where to find some of the materials that you need, as well as instructions of how to put everything together. So it's just that idea of providing more resources for people if they want to make more assistive technology, as well as somebody with a disability is wanting to request a device, they can go ahead and just, you know, go on there and say, hey, I want a switch or a bottle opener, and request it. And a volunteer in their community can look at that and sign up and say, hey, happy to make this for you, with the understanding that it costs the cost of materials and shipping, if that's applicable as well. So the whole idea behind it is just to make assistive technology more affordable.
I love this idea of open source in this realm. I mean, we hear all the time about, you know, open source software, and we know just by experience that software that tends to be open source, they tend to be very powerful programs, just based on the fact that you have so many people putting in the work.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of the reason we do that, one is for that affordability piece, but then there's another piece of really being able to change or modify to suit different people's different needs, right? So if somebody, so to talk about, you know, a sip and pup device, if somebody wanted to change coding on our LipSync device, which is one of our flagship devices, you could change the coding. So instead of maybe, you know, it's a 3-second puff of air in and a 1-second puff of air out, if that is more applicable to your needs, you can go in and change and kind of make something suit your needs better. Same with some of our low tech devices. They might be like a certain hand size for some of our pen holders. But again, if you're, you know, a child's hand is a different size than an adult's hand. So the ability to change a lot of the devices is really that customized piece. We really get a great response from people as well.
With assistive technology, in terms of manufactured devices, you run into that all the time where it's like, oh, it's going to work for this person because they have this specific set of needs, but it's not going to really work for this other person that is slightly different. Because as we know, you know, disability, there's a huge gradient to any different condition. No two disabilities look exactly alike. So the fact that, you could take this device and get somebody to modify it slightly so that it would work for you. So we're not looking at where, you know, you need, you know, 200 different types of SIP puff switches in order to have something for everybody in the community.
Yeah. And there is also the ability on our website as well to submit an idea. So if you have an idea for a design, maybe it's, you know, something simple, or maybe it's something a little bit more complicated, there is the ability to submit that idea as well. And then volunteers can also sign up and say, hey, I'd love to work on this design for you, and kind of, you know, figure out, work together, ask questions, and kind of try to bring your idea to life. So even if it's a one-off that is just going to benefit somebody somewhere, Sure, great. But likely there is also somebody somewhere that's going to need something similar as well. So we really love this idea that we're, you know, gaining ideas or gaining feedback from the community for a lot of our devices.
The other side of that too is that for manufacturers of assistive technology, I mean, really, they kind of make what they make.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that they do consult the community, they do see where the mm-hmm. need is, but it doesn't. I'm sure that it doesn't go all that far. So for you guys, I mean, you're able to sort of see every sort of level of need, you know, based on what the community is submitting.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes, you know, and this is not always the best way to this, but it could be something really simple, you know, like a bottle opener or a tube opener, yeah. which is a, you know, fairly simple 3D print, you know, maybe takes an hour of print time, depending on how big or whatever you want for your device. So, you know, these kind of more simple or like low tech ideas, but can be super life changing for somebody to be able to gain that part of their independence back. So we really love that there's no, you know, idea too small or anything like that, right? We really just want to make sure whatever somebody's issue is or problem that they're facing, we want to try to come up with solutions for that.
Yeah, because when we're talking about, you know, manufacture of assistive technology, I mean, there's all kinds of things that they have to consider before they're going to make yeah. something, you know, send it into a factory and, you know, because they have to make sure that, is there a market for this or a big enough market for mm-hmm. this that we're going to make some money off this or at the very least break even?
Yeah, totally.
So whereas, you know, with this, with something that's open source, you don't have to worry about it. You can make, you know, something for one person and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting community involved or having people kind of network with the community is always a good thing, I think. So there's also lots of those kind of extra outcomes as well that we really love about a project.
Now, are you guys sort of region specific or have you opened this up completely to everybody? It doesn't matter where they are.
We're a Canadian charity. So we, our programs, kind of, we work out of Canada, kind of have limitations on what my actual position can do in terms of staffing or things like that. But we have, sure. Volunteer chapters all across North America as well. So we have, last count, I want to say like 23 chapters throughout the US. And these are just groups of people or sometimes one person that are interested in this either as a volunteer maker, like they just are a hobby maker and they just want to make stuff. Or sometimes people have incorporated it in their work. So maybe they're an occupational therapist or an AT specialist, whatever it might be. And so they just think this project is cool and, you know, want to utilize 3D printing. And so we have these volunteer chapters that can kind of do a lot of that work or kind of help us be able to reach all kinds of places. So I mean, we sort of have to focus on Canada in some aspects just because of us being a Canadian charity and some of the work that we do. But we absolutely are happy to share resources or have conversations really with anybody anywhere. For whatever reason, we get volunteer chapter applications in from the U.S. all the time, easily monthly. I have a new one coming into my email of just people interested in it. So it's really cool that the project can, you know, do really well in the U.S., despite, you know, us not having any American staff down there or anything like that. But we have a really, really great network of volunteers all everywhere.
Well, talk to me a little about 3D printing, because I'm curious about this. Has that been a game changer in terms of this?
Yeah, it was definitely a game changer, I would say. So I really briefly mentioned it, but our kind of flagship device or the device that started this program, it's called the LipSync device, and that was the grant that we got from Google.org. And when we were looking at how to distribute this and how to keep the cost down, and when this idea of involving the community members or volunteer makers in it, we really are thinking, okay, this is a different manufacturing process, right? It's not a traditional manufacturing process. And how do you do that? And a big piece of that is 3D printing. Right. And so it just allowed us to be able to have these, you know, different parts that we might need at a much more affordable price. And for, you know, me to print something here in Nova Scotia and it be the same looking part as that you can print in Vancouver, right? Because we both have our 3D printers. We're just using the same files. So that idea of us being able to, I don't know, manufacture it wherever we're at with our 3D printers was definitely a game changer. It just allowed for us to look at that whole process more realistically. And especially when we looked at, you know, is this possible within the community? Are people going to be able to do this? When we could see the network of 3D printers out there, whether it's just people with personal 3D printers, universities and schools having 3D printers, people just having them in their own homes or libraries, We just knew, okay, there's people that have these resources or these things or are wanting to use this in a new way. So it definitely became a game changer for us. We have a really great, so we have volunteer makers, you know, that might make devices one-on-one, but we also have like really great volunteer printers of people that just love 3D printing and just need something to print, right? We call that printing with a purpose sometimes. You know, people want to print or want to use their 3D printer, or they want to design things or come up with project ideas, but they don't want to, you know, just print off their names or, you know, little fidgets and things, like, you know, so something a bit more purposeful or something that could have an end use. And so this project is really great for that as well. So I have lots of teachers in schools that use their 3D printing as part of their teaching and in their course, but also like, hey, we want to print stuff all the time, or, you know, the students always want to start the printers. What can we print a lot of? And I'd say, hey, print us a bunch of bottle openers and I'll get them out as needed. And they're happy to do that, right? So there's always that kind of nice piece of being able to connect with the community that way as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I can hardly wait till we all have 3D printers. When it's just like just as common as a regular printer.
I like them more than a paper printer, I got to say. I now hate paper printers and love the 3D printers.
Yeah.
No, I think you can get it for like almost $200-$300 now, Rob.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, man. different quality for different price points, but that's not to say that your $300 printer couldn't print really great things for you, right? So lots of. And I mean, I always tell people, if I can figure out how to use my 3D printer, again, no tech background, you know, all learned kind of on the job, then it's definitely feasible for a lot of people to get into if they want to, or find a friend with a 3D printer, because there's lots of them there too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Courtney, can I ask you, how does the lip sync compare to the Jouse, which was another product that Neil Squire invented years ago?
Yeah, so the lip sync is, thank you for asking, because we actually just launched our brand new version of the lip sync with some really nice updated features a part of it. So when we were developing the lip sync, and the Jouse was kind of the only comparable thing on the market at the time. But what was happening with that is at the time, and there's been some developments or some changes with this now, but at the time there was nothing compatible with touchscreen devices, right? Everybody was using touchscreen devices and everybody was on their phones. And so there was no great way to really connect with touchscreen devices, phones in particular. So we were really looking to kind of meet that market need. And at the time that was a big thing for it. And in terms of how it works, it is similar-ish, although it's not corded or plugged in at all. I think at one time the Jouse had to be plugged in at all times to a power source. Our lip sync device runs off of a cell phone battery, or can have like an external like little power bank that you plug into. But in terms of how it works, it's similar as that it's a computer mouse that you're going to use with your mouth that has a little opening on the end, so you can use your breath glass. And, you know, it can be used for laptops, iPads, cell phones, anything that you're going to use a computer mouse with, you could use a lip sync with. And then through the years and through our development, we can also use it for gaming. So it also has a joystick compatibility. There's just different modes that you can put it in now. So if you wanted to use it as a joystick and use it for gaming, you can absolutely do that, or you can use it as computer mouse. There's also a Bluetooth activation with it now as well. So there's lots of great improvements from the initial one. And we're really proud of our new device that just came out, a relaunched version of our lip sync that we just released as well. We've made some really nice updates to how it works, as well as the building process, because that's kind of a fun thing that not a lot of people think about. But when you are getting the community to build stuff for you or with you, you have to have some parts in there that are like user-friendly for people to understand right away, or kind of be more easier, or parts need to be easier to be found. So a lot of those things go into our design process as well. But in terms of use, the lip sync is similar to the Jouse, just maybe a bit updated and more affordable.
Excellent. Well, you guys have been, I mean, Neil Squire has been the leader in that technology for years and years and years. So it's really nice to see it, you know, come along the way that it has, and to be so much more accessible to people than it ever was before.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about just launching this to begin with. What was that like? Were there kind of questions, you know, about, oh, because this is a little bit unconventional. Yeah. Is the community going to embrace it? Like, was it a bit nerve-wracking?
Absolutely. So I was lightly involved with the program at that time, but it was nerve-wracking in the beginning. We especially had, so the original Lipstick Classic, that was our kind of first with these idea of what we would call build-a-thon. So we have the website that, you know, has everything to do it, but we also go out into the community and hold what we call build events, which is where we get a bunch of people to show up. We have a bunch of tools, we have a bunch of parts and the instructions, and we walk them through how to build it. So sometimes, you know, this will be an open community event where people can just sign up and come volunteer with us. Sometimes we'll be in schools doing this with different classrooms. And so really, sometimes we do corporate events. So people want to do like team building events or just something different to have their employees volunteer. They'll come in with us, sit down and build some devices for us. So we have some really great community groups that are always interested in doing this. So when we first started doing that with the lip sync, it was fairly daunting, especially because the lip sync is a fairly technical device. There was a lot of soldering that went into it, some different tricky parts that went into it. So it was fun to do the lip sync events, but now we kind of laugh when we think about those initial events when we were, you know, building a fairly technical device with a bunch of novice makers. That's a pretty big undertaking. I think we probably just didn't know enough to maybe be wary of that, and we just kind of jumped in. So it was a fairly big undertaking, but the response that we got from the community has been a similar response that we've always gotten, just that people are really intrigued by this new and different way to get assistive tech or to give back to the community. It's just, you know, it might take people a little bit to kind of believe in it or to kind of buy in a little bit, but we really are proud of the outreach that we've been able to do or the buy-in that we've gotten from the community over time. But it was daunting, to say the least, especially at that time with the kind of device, building the lip sync. And I think originally we had to build 300 lip syncs in a year or something like that. And that's a lot. It's a lot to do that many, especially, yeah, again, how technical it is. So it was definitely daunting, but we probably just didn't know any better. And we just thought this project was cool. And we got some really great responses and people were into it. And so, you know, that alone is a good motivation, right? When people are interested in your work. So you just kind of keep going and, you know, we're pretty happy that we've gotten this far at least. And we've, yeah, you know, kind of learned a lot along the way, but definitely I'll use the word daunting, I guess, as the best way to kind of explain, sure, the undertaking, but we live to tell about it.
It's always daunting, you know, when you're putting sort of the control of how successful something is going to be in the hands of the community, because, yeah, you don't know how they're going to respond. And it's something that you as an organization, you can't control. People, yeah, will either engage with it and accept it and be excited about it, or they won't. And having no control over that, yeah, it's daunting for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can tell you the first lip sync build I ever did, which I think was back in 2016, maybe 2017. And I, you know, had just learned to solder for the first time and then was, you know, helping people build this lip sync. And that alone feels crazy to think about. And I had lots of colleagues there with me showing me the way as well. But I remember, you know, we typically do a presentation where we just talk about the need of assistive tech, or, you know, how it can be so cost prohibitive for so many people. And just that need piece, you know, when you're really talking about it and talking about, you know, it's interesting how our Neil Squire origin story kind of connects back to this Makers Making Change program. So all those pieces. And I can remember standing there thinking about it and just thought, oh, this is a really cool program. And I want to keep doing this, right? And especially for me, having no technical background, was just kind of there because it was, you know, I asked a lot of questions and they told me to go to the event. And so I just had no idea that I would have this kind of interest in this sort of work. But it's just really cool and interesting. And you really get to meet a lot of passionate people. And so I think that that's contagious. I think when people come to our events, they enjoy it, and they enjoy that they're, you know, maybe getting to build something that they know has a direct end use. And so it can be a little bit contagious, and we have a lot of people, you know, coming back again and again, yeah, to our different events or getting involved in different ways, because it's just cool, because it's something a little bit different, right? And so that idea always kind of reels people in.
Now, to your knowledge, has anybody sort of taken this idea and ran with it? Or are you guys kind of out alone in front of the pack in trying something like this?
To my knowledge, I think we're a little bit alone. Tetra Society is a little bit similar to the work that we do here in Canada. They more so will do like one-off projects, but they also look to utilize volunteer makers to do different assistive devices or whatever it might be. So they're similar to us, but we work really collaborative with them and find that we both kind of have our streams. And there is different groups, a few more in the US for sure. AT Makers is a bit similar. There's a few different ones, a few more American ones. But there are some groups, but, you know, we're as a whole, we're a really collaborative organization.
Sure.
And in this space, I think you have to be, especially if you're going to do a bunch of open source stuff, you know, you kind of have to be open and willing. And so we're really happy to work with people and kind of everybody can have their own lane kind of thing, or we can collaborate with people on different things. Able Gamers is a really good example. Mm-hmm. Even though they do video game stuff, there's somebody that we, you know, meet with every now and then, quarterly maybe, and just say, hey, what are you working on? Okay, this is what we're working on, just so we don't cross paths, because we don't want to both be developing the same device, right? That's a waste of everybody's time. If you know, you take this, we'll take that, and everybody can, like, you know, keep moving forward with the same ideas in mind. So we're really happy to be able to, you know, have that collaborative piece with a lot of the work that we do.
Yeah, well, and honestly, like in a field like this, we want as many different organizations doing this, and like you said, having their own lane as we can, because the more ubiquitous we can make this and make assistive technology, the better, and especially the more options that we can present to people, right? And I mean, not only that, like sort of going back to this idea of homegrown or homebrewed assistive technology. Yes. You know, I think back personally on the show, I remember, you know, us talking about somebody who had built in their garage, they'd kind of built an adaptive game controller.
Yeah.
Or at the time it would have been like, I don't know, an Xbox or something, one of the older Xbox models. And yeah, and that was really cool. Fast forward a few years and Microsoft has taken notice of that, and they actually develop their own actual official adaptive controller, and you know, and now PlayStation has come out with one as well. So you know, those types of things, those homebrewed solutions can be really important, and when big manufacturers do take notice or do realize that there is a need there, they can sometimes come in and fill those gaps.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes the things that we are focusing on, or maybe I'm concentrating some of our work on, are a response of what we see or hear from the community meeting and what's kind of not being met in other places, right? So if we can kind of magnify or highlight that need somewhere, and if it makes somebody else do something too, then that's a good thing in our mind for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, in your experience, how does it kind of work in terms of people building devices? Like, say somebody builds a bottle opener for somebody, but then somebody else comes and goes, well, that bottle opener is really cool, but I also need like this. And then somebody builds that and kind of adds on to it. And slowly but surely, you know, you end up with a bottle opener that, I don't know, is a remote control for the TV as well or something. Like, sure. You know what I mean? Like do you find that different devices sort of get built on and developed into like different devices altogether?
I can't think of something that's kind of gone maybe like low tech to high tech. I can't think of any examples of that. I can think of devices that have started with one need and then kind of grown to be like, oh, hey, it turns out there's multiple needs for this device. Right. We just changed it a little bit. That certainly has happened. You know, where people will be using something for one thing and then clue in that, oh, hey, we can do this for this if we change it a little bit, right? So that for sure has happened. I can't think of anything that's gone from a low tech to a high tech.
Okay, that's fair.
But that's not to say that it couldn't happen. But I don't have any examples that jump off the top of my head. And I should also mention that our R&D department do oversee a lot of the devices, all of the devices on our website. So somebody isn't going to post, you know, a project up to our library and say, hey, here's this really cool device that is, you know, maybe something that is a little bit questionable in terms of, you know, what it does. It might be maybe something for safety issues or things like that. So we do kind of oversee a lot of that piece as well. So we make sure that we, you know, kind of keep an eye on some of those things too.
Right. Yeah. Because now that I'm thinking about it, actually, I do want a bottle opener that can act as a remote control.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, maybe just nobody thought of it yet, right? Like that's all it is. Yeah. So now I guess put it on the site and somebody will figure that out.
Or a remote control that I can't lose. That would be another good one.
I think that's been invented, though. I think just, you know, Velcro on the side of the couch or whatever.
Actually, yeah, you're right.
Tie it to your coffee table. Yeah.
Neck lanyard.
Yes.
The neck lanyard. Yeah, that's right. Carrying my remote control around her all the time. Okay, well, here's another question for you then. So, because I know you kind of first came on my radar when I was reading up on the ATIA conference, and I saw that you had done a presentation about adapting toys, and I thought that was really interesting. I won't ask you specifically about the presentation, but just in terms of like adapting toys or adapting different things that people may not think about adapting. Are there things out there like that can be adapted fairly simple with you know, a couple minor accommodations that become accessible?
Yeah, for sure. And I could talk about toy adapting probably for another 3 hours if you need me to nonstop.
Perfect.
And that's because I've become super, super passionate about it. So the quick answer is yes. There are lots of things out there that could be, you know, kind of quick adaptions. The reason that I think toys resonate or that people identify or want or are interested in switch adapting toys is because it's a really great way to talk about accessibility or about the need for adaptions and things when people are kind of outside of our world, right? If we are all working in assistive tech, we kind of know about those needs or know how to talk about it. But anytime you have a conversation with somebody and they're not familiar with, you know, that assistive technology piece or the idea of adaptations or accessibility, as soon as I kind of start thinking about or start explaining, you know, think about a toy that maybe has a button that's really small and hard to press. You know, if a certain kid doesn't have that fine motor skills with their fingers and they can't grasp it, how would they play with the toy? And then people just kind of start thinking about it, right? So there's something about that is really relatable or that people can kind of picture really easy for whatever reason. So when I talk about this idea of plugging in this bigger button and just a button that you can move to meet them wherever their needs are at, whether it's their head or elbows or, you know, just, you know, an easier button for them to hit on their table, people kind of really think, oh, wow, that adaptation really, you know, could be done pretty easy and think about how the world of difference that could make. So I find any time that I am talking to people that are kind of new in this space for whatever reason, if it's in, you know, a school of grade 6 students and kind of talking about that stuff, you know, it really gets them kind of thinking about, oh, how would I play with toys or what would I have done? And just thinking about that need of, you know, and they'll always say back to me, yeah, everybody deserves to play with toys. So it's that really simple kind of a baseline idea, right? That everybody should be able to do something. So that's kind of one of the reasons that I love talking about switch adapting toys, because it's a really great way to bring people into our world. And then just that idea of that it's pretty easy. I mean, I don't want to oversell it and say that, you know, you can switch adapt every toy. It's not that simple because there's some complicated ones out there. But, you know, some toys with like one or two buttons, all battery op. Most battery operated toys can be switch adapted. Again, I don't want to generalize this too much, but toys are, you know, not made with the most expensive parts inside, or, you know, the most complicated put together. So often when you open it up, you can see the wires and kind of trace circuits really easy. And so once you kind of do one, you can kind of take those skills and do another one. Once you know what you're looking for and you know what kind of parts to use or kind of the whole overall concept, it certainly is something that people can take on and run with. So there's definitely other things out there. Battery operated fans are a big one that people will switch adapt as well. So really, battery operated is a big piece to kind of go along with that, and just that complication of how many buttons something has. Generally, however many buttons something has, the more complicated it's going to be to switch adapt. That doesn't mean that it's impossible. It just means you're going to have a bit more work ahead of you. But certainly, you know, something with one button and it's battery operated and you can actually access the wires, there's probably a way to do it.
Right.
So this past September to December 2023, we did our second Hacking for the Holidays campaign. So Switch Adapting Toys is wonderful for a bunch of reasons. You know, kids should all have access to toys. And when you're around the holiday season, talking about that really hits home for people. So we started this campaign to make sure that there was Switch Adapted Toys for the holiday season. So this was our second year running it. We were able to adapt over 1,000 toys all across Canada. We built over 1,300 switches at around 40 joysticks. And we did this in all 10 provinces. So we're happy to say that Switch Adapted Toys went all throughout Canada. We had just over 100 events and over 3,400 volunteers participating in it. This campaign is really important to us for so many reasons. You know, there's that basic idea of making sure there's Switch Adapted Toys for Christmas, but it's also a really great time to kind of spread awareness or talk about assistive tech and about accessibility and a lot of those needs. And it's become a really important or passionate project for us because everything we do is built on, you know, feedback from the community. So the reason we knew that there was a need for Switch Adapted Toys was because we heard families or clinicians telling us, you know, there's not enough available, or there isn't a variety, or there isn't any choices for my 10-year-old to play with. You know, they're all toddler toys. So, you know, I want some variety so my 10-year-old can have a Switch Adapted Toy for Christmas. So we just really started to build our campaigns to make sure that we were meeting those needs. So we put together a really nice toy list. You know, I spend my summers walking around toy stores and kind of looking and seeing what's going to fit some needs, what we think we can switch adapt. And then having this really nice list that clinicians or families can choose from and look at and say, hey, we'd love to have this lava lamp for our 10-year-old, or this Pikachu or Peppa Pig or whatever it might be. So we try to have a really nice variety for families to choose from, which is not something that typically happens for them to be able to have a choice of what Switch Adapted Toys they can have. So we think that's really important. And through that, you know, that's kind of why, you know, when I did the presentation at ATIA on how to switch adapt toys, it's because I kept having people say to me, is this something I can learn to do? Is this something I can do? And so we were like, yeah, totally. So, you know, I kind of developed this presentation and built it into like a full workshop for families or clinicians to partake in, where we can show them or teach them the skills to switch adapt toys so that, you know, they can work with us and kind of do one together, take some of the information that we gave them, and then they can take that back with them. And if it's something that they want to keep doing to switch adapt toys for their own family members, they certainly can. So we've had parents take part in a lot of our workshops to switch adapt toys for the kids. We've had siblings or friends and relatives switch adapt toys. We've had lots of clinicians, so occupational therapists or speech language therapists, partake in a lot of our workshops, just because they want to have a better access to Switch Adapted Toys and really be able to access that variety. So we find it very empowering for people to be able to, you know, kind of take that choice back and get involved. Right. So we've had great feedback from the community, and we're going to do it again next year. So if anybody's interested in, you know, even getting a Switch Adapted Toy, or even, you know, just getting involved in our Hacking for the Holidays, we are happy to have that conversation year round. We provide these workshops year round as well. So if anybody's interested, please reach out. We're happy to help people have that access.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Now, actually, and there is something else that actually I wanted to ask you about that I noticed. Could you talk a little bit about the STEM with Purpose and what that is and how that works? Because I really feel like this is another really important work that you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favorite parts of the work that we do, for sure. So when we started Makers Making Change, you know, in that kind of community aspect, or having these group of volunteers building stuff, we didn't necessarily see students as, you know, the end result, but as through time and we were finding people to build with us, we started to realize, oh, wait, there is a ton of students, whether they're university students or pretty often the students I work with are in grades 5 or grade 6, who are wanting to learn hands-on tech education skills, or STEM, so science, technology, engineering, and math skills. A ton of really great teachers wanting to provide these opportunities. I mentioned, you know, 3D printing with teachers. And so we have a lot of really great people wanting to get involved. And so we just realized that realized that working with students could really fulfill so many outcomes for everybody, right? So the students love it because they get to solder and, you know, assemble something with their hands. They love, you know, getting involved in assembling things and really, really love soldering. So that's great. They get to give back to the community. We get to go in there and talk about assistive tech and accessibility. So there's all these really great outcomes that we think is just like a wonderful match that we're all very happy at the end of the day. And then again, not only do the kids get to build a bunch of stuff that typically works at the end of the session, but then we also, you know, have 20 switches that can go to a local rehab hospital or a group that needs them. So we're really happy to be able to partner in that way and are always looking for more schools to get involved. Yeah,
that's awesome. We've talked on the podcast ad nauseum about, you know, the fact that the accessibility works the best when it's baked in at the development process. And so if all, you know, this next generation of kids that, you know, might end up going to engineering, if they're coming into that with this understanding of what accessibility is and what needs might be out there, you know, we might start to see some of this stuff baked in from the beginning way more often than it is now. So I just think it's such important work.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, even if, you know, it's just kids being more understanding of their classmates that maybe use assistive tech in their school, you know, there's tons of outcomes. We just think it's super important and love that idea that we can, you know, get in there early, as you say, and really kind of change their perceptions or their thinking on a lot of stuff.
Love it.
So is there a resource on Neil Squire's website where people can find adapted bottle openers or adapted products so that they can purchase them? Like, you connect people with suppliers?
Yeah. Absolutely. So we connect people with volunteers. So if somebody wants something made, they can just go ahead and request it and a volunteer will sign up to make it for them. And we do have volunteers all across the country. So there's a tab called Assistive Devices and people go in and look through, and there's some different ways to select categories for maybe what you're looking for. But you can have a look at some of those devices and then just request it and somebody can sign up and make it for you. And then that process starts of saying, okay, I live here, you know, what's the cost of materials, that sort of thing. And we do oversee all of that as well. But typically it is cost of materials and shipping if applicable. So people can go on and check out our AT device library and see what's on there. And if they're not seeing something that meets their needs, they can always submit an idea as well.
Right.
Where can people go to find out more about Neil Squire and both about Makers Making Change?
Yeah, so both of our websites, so makersmakingchange.com and neilsquire.ca are our websites. And there's, you know, contact us forms, and there's lots of resources on both of those websites as well. So anything I mentioned in terms of people want to know more about switch adapting toys or 3D printing, we also have lots of resources for people to get involved, or just kind of, you know, if they want to start getting involved or are a little nervous, we have lots of resources for people there. And then we encourage people to reach out anytime with any questions. We're always happy to connect with them and help figure out what they need.
Well, Courtney, we want to thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. It's been an absolute delight. And we'll have you guys on closer to the holidays again. Right. And we can talk a little bit about Switch Adapted Toys some more.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks so much. Thanks so much, everyone.
Okay, Courtney.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
All right. That's cool. I love this idea of open source, you know, going open source with all of this. I think that's such an amazing idea.
Well, I think the opportunities are, you know, almost limitless. You know, like she was talking about toys with a single button or a couple of buttons. You have somebody, you know, take a look at the board in there or the wiring schematic and adapt a toy. You know, how many people go into a toy store and actually wonder, you know, well, I wish I could get that for my child, and don't even think about, you know, Neil Squire adapting a toy.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, if it's, you know, if it's just an on-off type toy, it's actually pretty straightforward because there's switch adaptations. They're actually available through our website, I believe.
Right.
For whatever size battery you want, it just puts a switch in line with the battery pack. But more and more, there's toys that have, in addition to the battery pack, they have some sort of physical on-off switch, and when it's a push button, that becomes a problem.
Right.
If it's a physical push over switch, super easy to adapt that toy to just take just with a battery adaptation.
Yeah. I guess it's the home brew part of it that is so powerful, because if you think about it, you know, for a company to decide that they're going to manufacture a piece of assistive technology or something that's adapted, they have to be pretty much guaranteed that, okay, there's enough of a need for this that we're going to make a profit. It's going to be worth, you know, manufacturing this thing. So for a lot of needs that are very niche, you're just never going to see. You're never going to see an adapted, like, whatever, maybe a bottle opener. Maybe that's a perfect example. You know, that's just something that doesn't exist in terms of a big manufacturer manufacturing them. So, but with this way, you can, because you can literally have somebody who's just like has a 3D printer. It's just like, yeah, no problem. I'll print this off for you. I can make one or two or three, and it's not an issue. That's where I see the real benefit in something like this. But also, I mean, how do you know, if you're in the community and, you know, an adapted bottle opener is something that you need, how do you even communicate that need to a company so that they would, an assistive technology company, for example, that you would think that they would even need that?
Yeah, you'd have to start asking around, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, companies don't do that. Generally, they stick to what they know is profitable. And, you know, and where their particular product's needs are. And yeah.
So open source and AI will take over the world.
Oh God, if we put them together. Oh God.
Open source AI.
Open source AI. Oh man.
Oh, no. AI with their own 3D printers. We're toast.
We're dead. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Can you imagine that? Give AI access to the 3D printers, and yeah, we're pretty much society's toast within 6 months. Scary thought. But you know what? Like that actually has a really, so sorry, before the mics came on, we were talking about, Ryan and I were talking about this new AI engine that's basically, it's text to video. I don't know if you guys have heard of this.
That's interesting.
Yes. Yeah, so it's called Sora. So it's, yeah, basically you can take a text prompt and it will produce video of it. I have no idea how it works. I'm assuming that it's like everything else. It just takes video from a bunch of different sources. But so some of the examples that they were showing is like, you know, give me a close up of a woman's eye where the pupil is the earth. And it produces that video, right? Which is frightening from the point of view of, you know, we're not going to know what video has actually been shot and what's AI video. But I don't know. What interests me though there is that you could do some really cool, accessible things. Like you could literally have people who are blind making videos by text prompt, which is interesting, right? Like that's, that's actually, you know, you could have like, yeah, I mean, the sky is kind of the limit when you can do something like that. And you can do it now, right now, quite easily with, you know, in terms of text to pictures.
But you don't know as a blind person what images are actually being generated. So
no, but
there's still a risk there.
Well, but I'm talking about in the sense of you like some like creativity wise, like
right.
You can have some cool things. You could have like, you know, you could have a film festival of films that were made by people
blind
who are blind
cinematographers.
You're just like, yeah, sure. Because, you know, really it's just your imagination is the only thing you really need. So, I mean, in that sense, AI, I see like great creative potential there and some really neat things that could happen. But of course, like I mentioned to Ryan, the scary thing is soon we're not going to know what the hell's what. You're never going to know if anything's was written or shot or drawn by a human being. It could all just be AI. Like just everything's going to be AI. And then AI is going to be pulling from AI. So then just going to be a big
caught in a loop.
Yeah, it's going to be like snake eating its tail. So, anyways, it's a whole tangent. That's a whole other episode.
It is.
That's a whole other episode of AT banter yelling at clouds.
Yep, indeed. Guess what, guys and gals? We had a bump in our numbers last month. Did you notice that?
No.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah, I sent you the emails, and there's only one possible reason that could have happened.
It's Liz, isn't it?
No. Yeah.
It's definitely not Liz.
No, it is the new segment, Steve's Dad Joke of the Week.
Oh, there we go.
So I think it's time for Steve's Dad Joke of the Week.
Oh, geez. Put me on the spot here, will you?
You're not prepared. You didn't think we were serious.
I don't know if you guys know this. I wrote a book.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I wrote a book on how not to fall downstairs.
Okay.
It's a step-by-step guide.
Oh.
Okay.
Nice. Wow. Ryan was prepared. He's been thinking all last week about that.
Jeez. That's right.
Oh, this is the one I found last week. Oh, yeah. Science puns make me numb, but math puns make me number.
Oh. Yeah, just keep your hand on the button. Okay, so here you go. Here, I got one for you. Why did the Scarecrow win an award?
Because he was outstanding in his field.
Holy cow, yeah, you knew that one. Okay, but that was an AI-generated joke.
Yeah, you want to play dad joke with me? You better come prepared, boyo.
No. I asked GPT to write me a dad joke, and that's the one it gave me. So I'm just like, see, we're not going to be able to tell what's an authentic dad joke and what is one that GPT wrote.
We're in trouble. You know what Jeff Bezos does before bed?
What?
He puts his pajamas on.
Okay, since ChatGPT returns the volley with, why don't skeletons fight each other? Because they don't have the guts.
Oh.
Okay, we're bleeding listeners now. So much for our bump in numbers. Yeah, there you go. Four dad jokes in a row.
I'm not contributing to this bloodbath.
No, you probably shouldn't.
My dad didn't tell jokes, so I got no dad jokes.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I mean,
just awful.
I didn't have a dad.
That's right. Yeah, well, who knows? Maybe four dad jokes. Maybe our numbers will quadruple.
We can hope.
We can only hope that that's how the way it works.
Exactly.
All right. Hey, Liz.
Hey, Rob.
Where can people find us?
I believe we can still be found at atbanter.com with more numbers than ever.
They can also drop us a line if they so desire at Cowbell.
Womp, womp, womp.
Come on.
That was in stereo, Ryan. I felt it. I sensed a disturbance in the force.
Yeah, I need Courtney to make a switch adaptation to that button so that we can press it.
Ryan and I are morphing together. You know, we're like Rylus.
Rylus.
There's a thought. There's a chilling, more a thought more chilling than
like Bennifer.
Oh man. Where else? What else? What else? Where else can they find us, somebody?
X, anyway. Facebook, Mastodon, Instagram.
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 Hey, that's a great idea for hey, did you hear that Taylor Swift crashed Instagram today?
No, did she? Yeah, what'd she apparently do now?
She told everyone to go vote.
Oh my lord, how dare she?
Actually, I don't know if that's the reason why Instagram crashed.
No, it was Instagram and Meta that Facebook, they crashed, and they said it was a technical glitch. Well, no poop, Sherlock. Yeah, we know that.
So
they didn't want to say, we probably got hacked and thousands or millions of people got their identity stolen. But I look forward to the class action lawsuit coming down the pike, because I was one of the parties who lost my account for 2 hours.
Hmm. Oh, wow. Huh.
Well, I didn't even notice.
I mean, I would have too, but I just didn't notice.
Sorry, Matt, I'm not really paying attention.
Somebody just tripped over a cord, unplugged something by accident. And
probably exactly what it was.
That's what I would say a technical glitch would be. All right. Well, I think that is going to about do it for us this week. Big thanks, of course, to Courtney for joining us. And we will see everybody next week. Fucker, I knew he was going to do that.
This podcast has been brought to you by Canadian Assistive Technology, providing low vision and blindness solutions, as well as physical access solutions and augmentative communication aids across Canada. Find us online at www.canastech.com, or if you're in the Vancouver Lower Mainland, visit our storefront at number 106-828 West 8th Avenue in Vancouver. That's one block off Broadway at Willow. You can reach us by phone, toll-free at 1-844-795-8324 or by email at sales@canastech.com.